Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grow With Us. My name is Evan Barton, and I'm your host who helps create conversations with the innovators and leaders of a growing tech center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The Grow With Us podcast highlights the work of community leaders, tech entrepreneurs, nonprofit professionals, and talent development advocates in Tulsa. Grow With Us is a podcast of In Tulsa. In Tulsa's mission is to connect talented individuals and companies to stimulate economic growth in Tulsa and to create more prosperous communities across the region. Each episode, Grow With Us discusses the growth of opportunities, the growth of communities striving for change, or the tech and innovation that is changing the landscape of Tulsa. On this episode of Grow With Us, I'm chatting with Dr. Lindsay Smith, professor of English and the director for the Center for Poets and Writers at OSU Tulsa. We discuss her roots in Tulsa and her boomerang experience back home, public creative workshops hosted by the Center for Poets and Writers happening this spring, and Tulsa's Lit Fest returns on April 18th through the 21st in 2024. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Grow With Us. I'm really, really excited to welcome to the show today Lindsay Smith. Thank you so much for being on this episode of Grow With Us. I'm super excited for our conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I typically kind of kick off these interviews or these episodes with just like a little bit of how we've met each other and like our history, which I have this later on in a question, but I will talk about it now a little bit too. I met you at book club.
Yes.
Book clubs are super fun. Witty Books does a great job of hosting, I think, like three or four different book clubs.
So many. They're adding more.
That's awesome. Like, I think we were there for Native Book Club, which is what you, you're a big part of. And then I think the next day, there was going to be like a horror lesbian book club.
Yes.
I was like, yes, I live for that one too.
Yes. And one of my colleagues in American Studies is getting a new punk book club together. I think they've met twice, maybe. So many to choose from.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's super cool. Well, let's just dive into our conversation, Lindsay. I'd love for you to introduce yourself to our audience and tell us your story in whatever way you feel comfortable.
Sure. So I have started referring to myself as an elder boomerang.
Not an elder boomer, elder boomerang.
Yes, because I have heard this term boomerang used to refer to people who, you know, grew up here, left and came back. And so I guess that's what I did, but not in this more recent wave. So, I grew up here in Tulsa. I have a lot of family here. I have a lot of relatives with roots in southern Oklahoma. Growing up, I went about two weekends a month down to Ada to visit family, both sides of my family. But I also had this Tulsa experience. So I grew up in Midtown before Midtown was cool. And just my neighborhood over by the fairgrounds, lots of, you know, teachers, cops. My parents were public school teachers in TPS. And I see now what a privilege it was to grow up here in many ways. I worked in Indian education after college and decided to further my study in English and study Native American literature in particular. So after attending college at Hendricks College in Arkansas, took a gap year, worked in Indian education in Sand Springs Public Schools.
Awesome.
And then I went on to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And did my PhD there. That was a really interesting journey as well. Worked in American literature, Southern literature, but with this Native lit concentration. Yeah. And I was a little bit of an oddball, really, because at that time, the place to go to do Native American studies or Native American literature was really like Arizona or, you know, but I headed east. It made all the sense in the world to me, but it was really interesting. So I was there for several years, and then in 2006, when I was finishing up and going on the market, there was a job at OSU in this area. So that's when I moved back. I lived in Stillwater for about 6 years. And then I moved back to Tulsa and began an appointment later at OSU Tulsa as well. So, I kind of have an academics story to tell about my interests. But I would say I'm a little unusual in that usually academics don't really get to move home, and that's something I've been very fortunate to be able to do. And I've been able to combine sort of traditional scholarly work with community engagement projects, which has been really rewarding and exciting to help me sort of re-engage with this community that's meant so much to me in my life. So
that's amazing. That's what, honestly, I knew of you before I knew you was was this, like, being an academic and also engaging in the community, and whether it's through stuff we'll talk about later with workshops that you're providing at Center for Poets and Writers, that reputation has preceded you, which is really cool. Folks like Carl Jones have sung your praises. So
thank you.
Really, really cool to have known about you and now know you, which is always so nice to have that moment. Let me jump into a couple things that I heard in your story that I really liked. Midtown Fairgrounds. I think we talked about this over coffee. I live there now. I used to live right by the Tulsa Driller. He was in my backyard for about a year.
Yeah.
And then now I live over a little bit closer to Sheridan on 25th in Lortondale.
Yeah.
So 50s and 70s homes, flat roofs. Really interesting. It's probably one of the neighborhoods, like, the furthest, I guess, east that has sidewalks, which is nice. Which, it's weird that I don't take it for granted, but, like, you don't notice that sometimes. Like, my neighborhood that I grew up in Midtown, 38th and Harvard, did not have sidewalks. And it's like, why did it not have that?
Right.
There are kids here.
Back in the day, that was, like, the suburbs, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, when
Tulsa
So I grew up north of the fairgrounds, and the thing I really remember was, we always walked to Bell's.
Yes.
And, you know, moment of silence for Bell's.
For Bell's.
And I really, like, my dream was to have a season pass to Bell's.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, if I just save my allowance long enough.
Literally.
But
then I could go every day.
I do remember trying to get a summer job, or I guess it was in the spring, I don't know, but trying to get a job at the Driller Stadium. Like, that would be the coolest job. It didn't
also
work out.
Used to be over there too. Yeah. That's
crazy.
I remember going to baseball games and soccer games there because they end up doing soccer by then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. I have a friend pursuing her PhD there also, I think. Such a cool area. Mm-hmm. North Carolina. It's North Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is like a kind of like, I've recently been to Greensboro, North Carolina, and they kind of have like a, I don't know if they call it the Tri-County or
Triad.
Triad, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like a really interesting and activated community in that region of the country. I want to like go and check it out a little bit more.
Yeah, so Greensboro, there's like Greensboro, Winston-Salem. I'm forgetting the third part of the triad.
Is it Charlotte or
might be Burlington? I can't remember.
Okay.
But then there's the Triangle, which is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill.
Yes.
And so there's this Research Triangle Park. So it's really all about some intentional plans to foster research in that, and then sort of take advantage of those three major research universities being in proximity. So Duke, Carolina, and NC State. It's a really interesting place. There's so many people who sort of make their way there on the way to somewhere else. And it's surprisingly culturally diverse, too. There are a lot of New Yorkers there. There are a lot of people from other countries that come there to work in pharmaceuticals or even publishing. So it was a great place. It was a nice step for me to sort of see a little bit outside of Oklahoma world when I was there.
As much as we love it here, it is good to get that perspective. I think that's a really interesting place to probably get that perspective too. East Coast, my experience over there has been a lot of, wow, this place has been around a lot longer than Oklahoma has. Which even then, a lot longer in the American context is like, you know, maybe a century or two when you're talking about buildings and like this like civilization or whatever. But I imagine when I go over to Europe, I'll be like, oh, this place has been around for like millennia.
But all you got to do, remember, is like think about Spiro Mound and then think about like indigenous cities sort of have structures in ways that we don't think of as like castles, but we can sort of think of the parallels. But for sure, I mean, it is it is amazing to just walk on streets that have been there, you know, for so long.
Literally.
Think of the people who have walked along them too. And
yeah, exactly. And then the last thing I want to touch on that will kind of jump into our next question is the moving home process. I think that's really interesting. You know, probably, or my tribal background, Cherokee and Choctaw, I think going from Oklahoma to out to the Northeast, and then in your case, from Oklahoma out to like North Carolina, and then coming back, that boomerang experience is kind of like symbolic in a way.
It is. Yeah, I think that's right. Gosh, I have so many thoughts.
I love it.
Well, I don't know, you know, if we talked about this when I chatted with you before, but I mean, I think certainly growing up here and being from Oklahoma, it's like you have this feeling that I got to get out of here. I can't wait to get out, you know, and that's natural for any young person, I think, just to want to see the world. But one thing that's funny is when I left, and I didn't have a car, I didn't have, you know, so when I left home, I was really in that place stuck. I mean, even Hendricks College is only like, I don't know, 3.5-ish hours. But since I didn't have transportation, like my parents left me there and I was there.
Until they came
and got me for Christmas. So there was no like, oh, I think I'll go home for a while. Get the laundry done. No, it's like, okay, I'm here. And it was the same kind of thing in grad school. Like I was just there and I was there. There was no, you know, coming back and visiting all the time. And so it really does force you to kind of immerse yourself in the experience of striking out on your own, meeting new people, and also importantly, explaining who you are and where you're from.
Yeah.
And I learned, really quickly, people didn't know what Oklahoma was.
People don't know anything about Oklahoma.
Where it was, what it looked like. I'd always just be like, oh, it's on top of Texas, you know.
Yeah, the hat of Texas. That's what I used to call it.
And it is funny how in some weird way, for some of us, I know not for all of us, but suddenly I was this like Oklahoma booster. Like,
Oh my God, I love home. As soon as you leave it, you're like, oh, I'm your biggest fan, Oklahoma.
Yeah, wild. I became this like Oklahoma. But I think it's a really good experience to be out of your comfort zone and to really think critically about where you're from and what it means to you. And I think for some people, they never go back because maybe it doesn't mean to them what it does to others. But it was interesting, like trying to explain at that time why anyone would want to study Native American literature. People didn't even know what I was talking about. Like some of my professors have heard of Louise Erdrich.
Yeah.
But, I did a lot of explaining all the time about, you know, what Indian country looks like. Yes, there are Native Americans in North Carolina, guys. There's 8 tribes here.
Literally.
just to point that out.
Yeah. Academics. You're explaining this to people with PhDs. You call them doctor and it's like, you don't know this.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That's right. So I did a lot. I had to be a little bit scrappy and just sort of coming up with my own course of study, working really hard on my own reading lists and things because people didn't exactly know. Though I will say I did find a lot of support from professors and colleagues and friends there too. So it was a good experience. That's an amazing English program, which is one of the reasons I went.
Yeah.
There's nothing like leaving to really help you focus like a laser beam on where you're from, what it means, and taking a step back and seeing your hometown and all its positive things and really having insight into some of the negative things too or the things you wish you could change.
Yeah.
When I moved back, I think I assumed, I'm just going to ease right back in, but it was a little bit of re-entry.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I've been going through recently, too.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a reverse culture shock, I guess, is the way you'd explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I went to Stillwater. So even though I was in Tulsa all the time, I really, you know, bought a house in Stillwater, made a lot of friends in Stillwater, and really came to appreciate living there for its positive things, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of my friends had not boomeranged.
Yeah, they haven't come home. Absolutely.
Yeah, so a lot of my friends, going to Booker T, there were a lot of folks at Booker T who were very ambitious, You know,
are you a hornet?
Oh, of course.
I was like, hold up.
Of course.
We've had so many hornets on this podcast. I love
gosh.
It. Me too,
yes.
as well.
Oh. And on that note, I mean, I also will say, I tell people some of my best preparation for getting a PhD came from Booker T,
yes.
even more than college.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So anyway, yeah. So, you know, like people leave and they are headed for the big time.
Yeah, they're heading out. They are flying high on
yes.
honestly, all the opportunity
oh,
that Booker
yes.
T kind of set them up for, which
yes.
is super awesome.
It is.
Yeah.
But that network, it had really changed by the time I came back. And I've been gone a long time. So kind of reacquainting myself with Oklahoma, with Tulsa, meeting new friends, trying to connect with people who were, I guess you would say, young professionals, because at that time I was.
But
I'm not anymore. I'm a young at heart professional now.
Yes.
That required some transition and patience.
Yeah.
But having said that, I know you mentioned Carl. I mean, Carl eventually moved back too. At the time, he was still in New York.
Yeah.
But I've seen that happen. I've seen friends, you know, they've decided to start a family and they want to be closer to other family members just for that network of support.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's a new job opportunity here that would never have been possible before, but now it is.
Yeah.
And so it's a really exciting chance to come home. And some folks, it seems like, you know, come here and reconnect and do a project and then leave again, which is interesting too. So a lot of that experience of being a boomerang, I think, really has changed
yeah.
since I went through that. But
different opportunities at different
yeah.
times and Tulsa's like phases that it's been going through. Absolutely.
Right.
That's,
yeah.
That's so, I mean, like for just to use Carl, hey Carl, Tulsa Artist Fellows was not an opportunity
yeah,
that
right.
had existed before
yes.
someone like, I think like before 2018 or so. It's I'm not
yeah.
entirely sure when that happened, but
that
also like
right.
Tulsa
yeah.
Remote, like that's an,
yeah.
another. It's a big like source of boomerangers and
yes.
getting folks back here
mm-hmm.
For a variety of reasons. Whether it's to start a new
yes.
project, whether it's to pursue continued study or something
mm-hmm.
like that. Which we're glad that there are folks that have the opportunity to do that at institutions like yours, and other ones. One thing I wanted to touch on really quickly was your experience kind of studying Native American literature and kind of like in the higher education space is really interesting. I went to Dartmouth and my undergrad's in Native American studies.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of the things that you probably influenced my reading list by being
oh.
like, this is the thing that you should read as a part of like Native American literature. It's really cool to, that experience was so interesting. I mean, I feel like my degree was so interdisciplinary, history,
always.
Anthropology,
yeah.
contemporary art,
mm-hmm.
like literature and English.
Yes.
And also like non-English or like
yes.
translated works
uh-huh.
as well,
yeah.
because there's things written in our traditional languages,
mm-hmm.
like.
Especially in poetry.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was a really, I like to say that my degree qualifies me as a professional Oklahoman, mostly because
a badge of honor.
Exactly. Because I understand the inner workings of what's going on here
yeah.
From a colonial perspective, a little bit from like a history perspective.
Essential.
Yeah. And even like a sociological perspective,
mm-hmm.
too, because I think like when you're really diving into identity
yes.
and the complexity of the indigenous identity here in
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma, it really is different here than anywhere else.
It absolutely is.
Having been other places, having met other Native people, like it just is different. I don't know how to just, I can describe it in so many ways, but
yeah.
I don't know if they're like, it's my way of describing it. Not the way that's backed by any science theory or literature or anything like that. But
I think we can just start with the fact that there are 39 tribal nations here.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just unlike anywhere else,
yeah.
you know, in this country. And strangely enough, I mean, and I will refrain from turning this into a scholarly panel, but but I think it's interesting how at the same time that there is this visibility because, I mean, the tribes here, especially in Tulsa, are so very key to the economic engine
yeah.
of the way the state and the city is run, you know, just without question. I think at the same time, There is a weird sort of lack of recognition or invisibility that comes at the same time.
Because come to downtown Tulsa.
Yeah.
Where are the Native people? Well, not where are the Native people. I think you would see them on the streets, but
oh,
you don't
course.
See them on the buildings, or you
yes.
don't see them ingrained in this. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's striking.
So if
I
you think. Go to Chicago, you go to Minneapolis, you go, there's like the Native American Center, or the, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think people definitely gather and participate in all of those kinds of activities and political organizing as well. But
yeah.
it's happening in a different way. And I think, too, in other places where there are reservations in the way that they've traditionally been understood.
Yes.
Of course, now we have reservations
like,
there, too. Exactly.
Now we are.
There's that almost removal from the mainstream sort of American city spaces or whatever
yeah.
that almost makes it easier to say, like, well, these folks are over here. Let's
yeah.
honor these folks over here. Well, here, everywhere is, like, everywhere
is here. And
everywhere's in your country, though.
I think it also disconnects us from a Pan-Indian experience
yeah.
in a lot of ways. Not that there is one, but I think
yeah.
that was something that I kind of felt like when I was at Dartmouth, there was a lot of us understanding that our experiences, wherever we came from, actually were pretty similar. And then we were having a Pan-Indian experience because
yeah.
we were all Native people in one place.
Yeah.
And then to leave, or then for that to kind of manifest in different ways, it was really, really interesting to see like how our identities were kind of being filtered through or even being perceived in a place of high academic rigor, also privilege, power, mixed all of those other like systemic issues that can kind of really put a spotlight on your identity for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
So
I hear that.
Really interesting. We took that conversation everywhere, but I loved it. I think we've talked about Tulsa. We've talked about your background. I'd love to kind of talk a little bit more about what you're doing right now in your work.
Yeah.
So I'd love for you to tell our audience a little bit about your role at OSU Tulsa and the Center for Poets and Writers.
Sure. Well, about 5 or 6 years ago, I'm losing track of time. The pandemic really confused me about the passage of time. But anyway,
yeah.
a few years ago, let's just say that, I began an appointment with the Center for Poets and Writers and began working on a strategic plan to really emphasize our higher ed mission and community engagement, especially with fostering writing. And then we eventually added filmmaking to that as well. So we are a literary and film arts outreach program, and we model a lot of the work we do on other literary arts outreach programs that we have researched and visited in other places. In my case, I had a chance at the beginning of that appointment to visit other literary arts outreach centers in Houston and Minneapolis and Portland. And so we have these goals that really mirror a lot of successful centers like this in other places. Those goals, some of them we've met, some of them we're still striving to reach, and others we don't know if we're ever going to reach them. But
yeah.
That's kind of the inspiration. And so we host a lot of community activities and workshops that are open to anybody in filmmaking and writing. So coming up this spring, we have offerings in speculative fiction writing, motion picture storytelling, a new one in film music and scoring, which is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool.
I think it's cool.
Definitely going to be cool. and we have a couple new offerings in film editing and, lighting, which is really needed, I understand. And then this summer we have my colleague, Russell Cobb, who's going to be leading a workshop called Not Even Past, Writing History with Flair, which he offered last spring to a full group of folks. So he's going to be repeating that this summer. But we have all kinds of different genres represented. I'm working on putting together a community poetry mentorship situation. And we also host, we're presenting sponsor for the Tulsa Lit Fest, which happens in April. And then last year in the fall, we hosted, along with some other community partners, the Indian Territory Film Festival for the first time.
Yes.
So we really have our hands in a lot of things. And my colleagues at LitWAC is our filmmaker in residence, and he's working on stepping into a role with entertainment media that's going to be growing here on our Tulsa campus.
Awesome.
So we just have so many really community-minded folks that are working on this big project that's growing.
That is so awesome. I really mean it when, like, the development of arts in this community is something that is, like, so important to me. So it's, you are doing, you and your colleagues are doing the work in getting the community active in it as well, which is super, super exciting to see. And I hope that it creates more and more opportunities for people here. We've kind of already seen, like, just in the past couple of years, like, what like, Tulsa as a film place can look like, and telling our stories from here involves having people from here to enable those stories to be told in a more authentic way.
Yes.
And that's in everything. Like I, you mentioned kind of lighting. It's important for people to be lit right. It's important for for people's like full authentic selves to be like visible on screen. I think that just in, if you're looking at the history of Indigenous people in film, they were specifically, you know, in these old Westerns, people were in brown face or in red face and lit to be that, for that to be like exaggerated as like a feature of them. And they weren't even Native people. Not that it would have been better if they were, but like,
no, you're right.
It's just so interesting how like, you know, media and our culture, it kind of, they kind of go hand in hand. Our media reflects our culture for better or for worse as a criticism oftentimes. But now I think we're in a really interesting place with media here for it to be telling our dark past and how we've come from it in a way. I think that's like something that we're really zooming in on with Oklahoma and with Tulsa. It kind of does have a dark past that I don't think we're shying away from, because I think personally that there are so many lessons to be learned from this. I think there's so many directions to go from just us waking up almost. I don't know. It's been really cool. And I know that you've had a part in really enabling a lot of creatives to be in that space. So I just want to say thank you. And that's, your work is awesome.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. I'm really inspired by, honestly, my students and how they've, some of them are working on their own films, and some of them have just really taken these opportunities and shown up and been present to be working on these productions. And it's just the kind of thing that, again, I never really imagined was possible when I was growing up here. And I hope that it means that even if they take opportunities elsewhere, that if they want to be here, that they can now, and, you know, don't feel like they have to go elsewhere to make a life here, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Sorry, no shade, Hollywood. It is crazy out there. That is not the place. It's not, I don't know. A starving artist can still survive, I guess. But like, it is the struggle bus. And I don't wish that on anyone right now. So come do it in Tulsa. You don't have to struggle as hard. Yeah. You'll be in the struggle car, maybe.
We'll help you.
Exactly. Yeah. So you mentioned Lit Fest, Tulsa Lit Fest. I'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit more about it, its origins, and kind of what we can look forward to with this iteration of it.
Our first Tulsa Lit Fest was in 2018, and we began that as really more of a poetry festival, but we soon realized that we were going to be leaving out a lot of important literary genres, people who participate in, you know, this world of self-expression, and so decided to expand that a little bit. That first year, we got kind of lucky because there were just a few people that were coming into town, like visiting OSU, and the dates just kind of lined up, and it all sort of came together. And I don't know how we did it, because we started late and we didn't know what we were doing.
Started on Indian time.
but it went well. We had a great, you know, experience and good feedback, and learned some lessons too after that first year. And then, you know, just kind of kept working on it, coming up with new ideas. And then it was 2020.
And the infamous year.
Yeah, we were about to, you know, launch Lit Fest, and we had such a great just list of guests and so many wonderful things planned. And it felt like we were really building some key momentum, support, funding, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, see y'all on Zoom, you know. And,
tough.
You know, as we all recall, it just took a long time for people to feel comfortable doing something on that scale.
Yeah.
Even when people were sort of tiptoeing back out in public, it wasn't necessarily on this, like, we're having a massive festival
yeah. with many guests. And we want everyone to come. Yeah.
And people are going to ride on airplanes from other parts of the world. It's going to be great. So we really just didn't do it. Yeah. And I just didn't know if we'd ever do it again. And just personally, like, you know, my daughter, when all that went down, my daughter was in preschool. So I was soon realizing that for this foreseeable future, I was going to be parenting her and teaching her at home, teaching my students from home. And I didn't know if we were ever going to do community things like at all. We did a few workshops over Zoom, and those were really interesting because we had people from Alabama, all other parts of the country participating, which was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I just was like, well, that was great. Anyway, it's over.
Yeah.
And so eventually Onika Asamoah Caesar of Fulton Street Books reached out to me and was like, what's up with LitFest? And it wasn't too long after she had opened her bookstore in Latimer, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, oh, yeah, LitFest. Yeah, that and everything.
I've heard of her.
But I thought, well, let's talk about it. I mean, I really honestly just wanted to chat with Onika because I think I'd met her in passing, but I hadn't really had a chance to just sit down with her. So I met with her. And then my colleague, Kresh Ali Lansana, also just kind of kept poking me like, when is LitFest? What's up with LitFest?
When are we getting lit?
It's like, what? A good question.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was nice to see you guys. Like, I just kind of, like, you guys don't have any idea what you're in for.
Yeah.
But not long. I mean, that was kind of around the time, I think, when we started meeting in person for book club again, Native American Literature Book Club. And I really had gotten to know Victoria a little better. And so I kind of chatted with her about the small press fair, which we had always had with LitFest, because she started really reaching out to and stocking a lot of indie presses. And so I thought, oh, I don't know, she would be really good. And she's really knowledgeable and passionate about that. So really sort of the four of us got together and started talking about, okay, let's do LitFest, let's bring it back. So, I mean, over time, the partnerships kind of reconfigured in terms of leadership and who was, you know, involved. I would say definitely this is much more of a team effort, as it should be. And it really builds on, I think, the unique strengths of each of those folks who are involved in so many important community initiatives and have their own passions and communities and connections. So, yeah, the 2024 LitFest will be here April 18th through the 21st. And we have some, like, mixers, parties. We have literary trivia. We have some amazing headliners who are going to be participating. Mona Susan Power, Terrence Hayes. We have our first Digibooks book market, which is going to be really fun. We have a Comanche poet who's going to be with us for that, as well as just a curated list of all different, mostly Oklahoma related, but Native authored books.
That is so cool.
I'm really excited about that. And then we have a launch party for the latest Acelet zine. I've heard there will be a mechanical bull.
Uh-oh.
And y'all know I didn't do that part.
That's the lit in LitFest.
Take credit for that. I know Onika's been working really hard on that part. I think it's going to be a Fulton Street. So, I mean, we just have all things, kinds of things that come together for LitFest. And every year, really, I just get excited about the cool things people are doing. We have Paul Alexander coming to read from a new book about Billie Holiday called Bitter Crop. So we're going to do a jazz tribute to Billie Holiday along with this book reading and signing at Vassar Hall.
Oh, awesome.
And I would just say overall, I was saying to someone the other day that the thing about Tulsa LitFest, I think, you know, it's very sort of amorphous in that it has so many different components that are reaching different folks. But having done a little bit of research on sort of book festivals or these kinds of events that happen in other cities, you really can almost predict every year what those are going to look like based on who has a new book and who's on tour. And, yeah. and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, everyone's excited about seeing an author who has an exciting new book out. And we do have, you know, folks who are on tour that come to Lit Fest as well. But a lot of our intention is to make sure that this is a weekend that is actually not like the book festival in Dallas or the book festival mm-hmm. in, you know.
Yeah, it's Tulsa's version of it.
Yeah, yeah, we want it to be Tulsa. It's yeah. Tulsa Lit Fest. And it's for, you know, the folks who are here. And of course, we welcome people from out of town, but it's really going to have that Tulsa flavor. And we really want people to connect, feel inspired and positive, and even be encouraged to start writing.
Yeah,
if that's
exactly.
something they really are interested in. We have so many open mic opportunities, which isn't always a part of a typical book festival that's geared more for readers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is a lot of work, but I think it's so
like
rewarding.
It.
You know,
it's awesome.
I was saying to Victoria and I were talking about the other day, and we're in that spot right now where like things are pretty much kind of planned,
yeah,
but it's not
out.
Happening yet. So we're like, you know, we're feeling that weird nerves, like,
yeah.
oh, it's so much. And then once it starts, we're like having so much fun and oh, yay, this is great. Let's do it again, you know.
Exactly.
So that's what I'll say. I just, you know, if you haven't been to Tulsa Lit Fest before, you don't really know what it's all about. I mean, we really want you to come. We want to welcome you and help you find what will encourage you and help you find those new friends, that network of people. You know, that's really what we're here for. So
that's awesome. It sounds lit.
Of course. It's so lit.
It's going to be so lit. I'm really excited to participate. I think kind of what you just talked about is so many things that are really awesome. I love the idea of there being open mics mm-hmm. at, you know, a place where I think some people might self-select themselves out. They're like, oh my gosh, these people have books. Like,
yeah.
But it come. And if you're
yeah.
ready, like being in that audience is honestly probably going to be more rewarding than doing it with a bunch of, not amateurs, but people starting out. You might get someone that hears something you said that it hit them in a way that it might not have hit in another way. I don't know. That's my encouragement to anyone that is like maybe a little trepidatious about even mm-hmm. starting something, or you've already started something, but you want to take that next step. I would just encourage anyone listening to just do it. And that would be a really cool place to get started. When you're talking about the Tulsa flavor, I think that that's something I've started to like keep my eyes open for a little bit more. You know, what is it that Tulsa does
yeah.
differently than other places? And I think kind of what you're hinting at and what we've kind of talked about, and my observation is like we do community really well in those spaces where art is being produced. Art is the center of it, whether it's live performance, poetry, you know, music, or really stand-up comedy. I went to stand-up
yeah.
comedy, Auntie's Acting Up, this past weekend. It's like,
oh, cool. Was it
people?
Fun?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
People show up in
yeah,
Tulsa, and I think it's really that's the difference. Like,
yeah.
We have this culture that is indescribable, but like, I think there's characteristics that are really unique to this area. And I think you're
yeah.
going to get a lot of folks like that at Tulsa Lit Fest. So,
oh, I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You start seeing kind of those familiar faces from those events that you mentioned
mm-hmm.
and just maybe taking that extra step to, you know, say hello to someone that maybe looks familiar, but you haven't had a chance to connect with yet.
Exactly.
A lot of the open mics we do with Center for Poets and Writers, I always take a moment to say, hey, guys, we're going to take a break. And I would really love it if you just found somebody, introduce yourself.
Talk to someone
it
new.
It sounds
literally.
A little bit like church youth group, but I don't mean it to. But I really try to also just connect people, introduce myself.
Yeah.
Because that can sometimes make the difference between somebody feeling welcome and heard and, you know, inspired and someone being like, I'm out of here, you know.
Absolutely. And you are like the most bubbly, effervescent person. Like, I hope that breaks the ice.
Thank
I think
you.
It does.
Yeah.
Lindsay, this has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience kind of about things upcoming? You've talked about lots of opportunities to get involved with your workshops at Center for Poets
yeah.
and Writers. We've got Lit Fest coming up on April 18th through the
mm-hmm.
21st. Anything else that you want to share with us?
I think we've, you know, covered so much of what I've I've been thinking about. Other than that, I mean, I would just say, like, I know I've been talking to people a lot lately about, you know, what does it mean to sort of promote Tulsa or be like a Tulsa booster? And I think, you know, we can't look away from some of the things that are really hard about living here and some of the things that make it hard for people to feel included or welcome or that this is a place that they could really make a life. And so I think, you know, while we're celebrating, you know, we also have to think about the really hard things, yep. things that we can do to address those concerns as well so that, you know, we can build this positive future for all of us. So, yeah, we got to do a little rah-rah Tulsa. We also got to do like, hey, Tulsa, let's talk. So.
Exactly. Yeah. A little intervention moment.
Let's do some hard things too. That's Absolutely. Really all I guess I have to say.
Well, that's awesome. I, once again, just thank you for being on this episode of Grow With Us. I think sharing all these amazing opportunities coming up to get involved with what you're working on is really exciting. I think there's going to be, we're driving traffic and hopefully you see yourself in these places because they were meant for you to be there. So, and thank you for sharing with our audience.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Grow With Us. Grow With Us is supported by In Tulsa Initiatives. If you're interested in learning more about In Tulsa services for job placement and workforce development, please visit talent.intulsa.com. From there, you can join our talent network where you'll get access to our newsletter, and our talent team will make sure we put the right opportunities on your radar. We put the choice to pursue a new career and opportunities in your hands. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to be notified when more episodes of Grow With Us are released. Let us know what you think about how we're doing by rating and reviewing. It really helps. Grow With Us is edited and engineered by Rant 9 Productions and Jesse Ulrich. This has been Grow With Us.